I'll take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world, eh? I'm on top of the world, eh?
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to JZ's Football Fix, and this is the A-League Hour, a new podcast here for those that have been listening to us. We are 10 episodes into an EPL podcast, season something. Now we've decided to get involved with the A-League. Being Australians, we thought this might be pretty good for us to do this. So we'll see what happens. Jake, to my left via Skype, how are you, mate?
I'm not too bad, mate. How are you?
Absolutely wondrous. I see you've been getting the profit today in the cup, which is always positive.
Yeah, can't complain.
Can't say I've won anything. I think I've lost about $120, but that's what happens when you go with about the $31 odd horses, hoping one of them gets up, and then you win about $300. But at the end of the day, it hasn't been that case. Most of the $10 horses have been getting up, so. You know what? It's a learning curve. It's definitely a learning curve for me. But enough about the horses for this podcast. We are here to talk about A-League, and we will be going in depth today. We've got a lot of topics to talk about. Well, not a lot. We've got a few topics we can talk to you about. Certainly ones that a lot of you A-League followers have been thinking about. Like, we can assure you of that. But we will be going through the standard review and preview of each week's fixtures, coupled that with the Bet365 Bet of the Week, which we have pulled over from JJ's Football Fix, the home of everything EPL podcast. But Jake, we have to start off with the review of round four of the 2016-17 A-League season, kicking off on Friday night, where Melbourne City enjoyed a 2-1 victory against an Adelaide United side that has been struggling to start the season. Bruno Fornaroli, who else, scored twice, 11 minutes in and 56 minutes in, before Sergi Guardiola scored his first goal in Adelaide United colours. But it wasn't enough, and as it turned out, Melbourne City did get the chocolates and enjoying a very positive season, Jake.
They've started reasonably well, obviously, making them into the final of the FFA Cup, and now they're sitting nicely in second as well. I don't think Adelaide are as bad as what people are making them out to be so far this year. They played well, and I don't think they really deserved to lose the game. But at the same time, City have been class so far this year. But once Adelaide do get their players back, like Karuska and Sirio, they'll be well and truly up there again. City have started really well, as I'm sure plenty of people predicted with the players that they do have. And like you said, who else was always going to be Bruno Fornaroli? And he scored a penalty, I think, and another goal that was pretty fucking good as well.
Yeah, his first goal was just ridiculous.
he's just taking on from what he did last year. He's pretty class, and City look like they're going to be well and truly up there this season.
Oh, definitely. And unfortunately for Adelaide, they did hit the woodwork twice. So they could have potentially got something out of this game, but it wasn't to be for Adelaide, as they, albeit haven't looked that bad this season, they have been getting negative results, and that has turned them to be slightly lower than I'm sure they would be hoping for, slightly being an understatement. They are currently sitting in ninth position with 1 point. But Jake, I know you definitely fancied Melbourne City pre-season. We didn't obviously go through a pre-season predictions, obviously, because we started now. But I know you quite fancied Melbourne City, albeit you are a Melbourne Victory supporter. You can tell a good team from a bad, and Melbourne City certainly in that good category.
With my pre-season prediction, I did have them sitting in third place to finish the season. At the moment, they're sitting in second, but realistically, the ladder doesn't really mean that much this early in the season. But with the players they've got, the firepower they've got up front, and they've looked to address their defensive issues as well, they're definitely going to be up there this year, unfortunately for my sake. But they are a class team, and I've got them sitting in the top three, and Adelaide, I think they'll still make the finals. They've started slow, obviously, but like I said before, once they get team players like Kruskar, Sirio and Enrique back into their team, I think they'll start hitting their form that they did last year. Maybe not as good as last year, but I still think that will finish in the top six.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. I'm pretty sure we're in the same boat in regards to both of these teams. I actually think Melbourne City would be a fair enough team to probably get the minor premiership.
Yeah, be up there.
But yeah, they'll obviously be in and around the top two or three. Moving along, Newcastle Jets 0, Sydney FC 2, Alex Brosk opening the scoring in the 8th minute, who else? before Milos Ninkovic did score in the 49th minute to give Sydney a 2-0 win. Sydney enjoying a fruitful start to the season, and in this fixture they definitely deserved their victory. Newcastle, not a bad team, but they just looked a little off the pace this game. But they didn't really produce much until they forced Danny Vukovic into a late save, which was quality going right into the bottom corner, but was a decent save off Andrew Hall, I believe it was. But Sydney definitely the team to look out for this season so far.
Yeah, they've started the season reasonably well. They've won 4 from 4, and they haven't conceded a goal yet this year either. So definitely wouldn't be complaining being a Sydney fan at the minute. But I don't want to get too ahead of myself on Sydney at the moment, because if you realistically look at the teams that they have played, they haven't exactly played any class teams, I don't think, yet. I've got nothing against any of the teams that they've played, but at the same time, they haven't really played the peak of the A-League so far. But you can only beat what's put in front of you, and they're doing exactly that. I watched the game, and they played really well. They did exactly what they've done in the other three games. They've just gone through the motions, really. They're not rushing things when they have the ball. Like, yeah, they only had 52% possession, but at the same time, they're not rushing things. They're just going through their own motions, and then when they feel realistically fit to do it, they spring an attack, and they've got the firepower to score on realistically any great attack that they create, and they've done exactly that each game so far. Well-deserved 2-0 win, but I don't know how Newcastle didn't score with one of those late chances. But Vukovic is deciding to turn into Neuer for Sydney after playing fucking shithouse last season's victory.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always rated Danny Vukovic as a keeper. I thought he was very good at Perth, but at victory he wasn't anything special, to say the least. But it's good. Good to Sydney are definitely enjoying a season, like I said, a very good one at that. And I like we said about City, Melbourne City, that is, even though there's not another City in the league. I'm pretty sure you would have had Sydney in your top four
pre-season. Yeah, I do. They're alongside City. I've got them sitting in second for my A-League prediction. City sitting in third. So, yeah, the top three is pretty self-explanatory for me for the A-League this year. But with Newcastle, I thought I had them as a sort of dark horse to potentially make the six, and they could be. Like, I'm not, just because they've lost doesn't mean that I don't think that they're good anymore, because they beat Brisbane 4-0 like 2 weeks ago. But at the same time, I think there's a different class in the A-League this year. But yeah, I've got them sitting around 7th, 8th, 9th region. Like, I think it's going to be a real jam-packed A-League year. I don't think there's going to be too much distance between 5th and 8th and 9th. I think Newcastle will be in that sort of pack. They've got a decent team, but there's a different class this year, and they don't really have any standout players in a sense.
No, but it would be very good for a Newcastle Jets like side to get into the top six.
Yeah.
Just something different. Just we've been realistically been seeing a lot of the same teams been making it into the top six over the last couple of seasons. So it'd be nice to see like a Newcastle get in there. Moving along, Western Sydney Wanderers 1, Central Coast 1. Brendan Santelab scoring very early in this game. And they would keep the lead until the 61st minute, where a calamitous mix-up in defence, to say the least, allowed Adam Berry to slot into an open net. I'm not really sure who Adam Berry is. I'm pretty sure he's just a young player coming out of their academy.
I've got no idea.
Maybe we'll see a bit more of him over the coming season, but he did probably score his first goal in the A-League. I can't confirm that, but I haven't seen him score another one. But a very good point here for Central Coast.
Yeah, well, Western Sydney realistically should have put the game away. They should have been up about 3-4 nil by the time Mariners did score their goal. But I don't know what's going on with Western Sydney this year. At the start of the year, I didn't really have them doing too well this year either, because their recruitment has been very questionable, and how they've lost Topless Stanley, although I don't really rate him as a great centre-back anymore. He's still a player that you sort of need to replace in the defensive half, and they haven't done that, obviously. And then Mariners should have won in the end, really. Like, they've scored, and although Western Sydney did dominate the first hour, Mariners did have a penalty shout waved away late in the game.
It should have been a penalty.
Clear penalty.
Yeah.
And if they score that, they come away from Spotless Stadium with a 2-1 win. And I would, if there's going to be any managers sacked this A-League season, which it's an A-League season, so there's always a few that do get sacked, I think Tony Popovich could be the first one on the chopping block, because Western Sydney are what you'd probably call a probably big club in the A-League, obviously, and they obviously expect a lot more than what they're probably getting so far this year. So, I think Tony Popovich could be on the chopping block if things don't turn around for Western Sydney.
Yeah, and I'm sure plenty of the Western Sydney supporters will be agreeing with you that a lot of them are not really on the Tony Popovich train at the moment. And it's a shame to see, because he has led them to so much. He led them to the Asian Champions League. You know, he's been there for a fair while now. So it would be sad to see him. And he was touted for the Socceroos squad. Everyone thought of him that highly, that he should be the Socceroos manager.
Nothing lasts forever, Jordan.
Exactly, as we're seeing.
It was a nice little fairy tale, but
Jose Mourinho, he's moved on a little bit, not quite performing the way that people expect him to as a manager. It would be a bit sad to see Popovich go, having been there for a bit. But I think if the results don't pick up, then his sacking would be justified. Central Coast, to me, a bit iffy this season. I'm not sure what to think of them. I can't tell if they have improved on last season yet. They've obviously, a point here against Western Sydney away is certainly a lot better than what they would have done last season. But I don't know, Jake. I can't put my finger on Central Coast.
I've got them, unfortunately for Mariners fans, I've got them sitting last on my prediction for this year. I think they have improved on last season, though. I think their new manager, Ocon's a bit of a breath of fresh air for them, too, because he's one of those managers, from what I've noticed over the first 4 weeks. He's like a bit of a fearless manager. Like, he doesn't mind experimenting with different things. And I think that's the thing with the Mariners last year, was their manager was trying to stick to the exact same thing for 27 weeks when it obviously wasn't working. But the thing with Ocon is he's not afraid to change things. And he's picked up players, like Mariners have picked up players in the off season and so far this year too, like Connor Payne, Scott Galloway, Jax Fatty, that Tavares bloke. So, and I'm not sure if this Berry bloke was at Mariners last year or not. And O'Donovan up front is a reasonably decent striker to have, because he just gives 110% every single game. So I don't think the Mariners are that bad, but I think there are obviously a lot better teams in the league. I can see improvement on last year, so that's good thing. That's good news for Mariners fans that there's obviously improvement, but at the same time, I think when they come up against teams like City, Sydney, Victory, they're going to be really caught out on those little areas. But when they're coming up against teams like Western Sydney, Newcastle, those sort of teams that aren't exactly top class this year, but are still all right, I think they could pick a few points out of them too. But yeah, I've still got them sitting in last place for this year.
Can't disagree with any of that, Jake. Moving on to Sunday. And we have Brisbane Roar 2, Perth Glory 1. A very tight tussle, this one. Jamie McLaren scoring his first goal of the season before Marinkovic did pull one back for Perth with a pretty nice finish off a rebound, I'm pretty sure it was. Before Brandon Borello did give Brisbane the win in the 75th minute after a decent run. We picked up the ball just outside the 18-yard box and skipped past two or three defenders before putting it into the bottom corner. Arguably should have had a second. Don't know how he missed the one he did. Don't know if you saw it, Jake, but I'm sure he'll be wondering how he missed it. But Brisbane, good to see them bounce back and get a result this week. Obviously, a team I rate quite highly. And Perth, another team I rate highly. So this was obviously always going to be a good game, and it did end up being a very good game, Jake.
Yeah, well, I was shocked by this. Like, I wasn't exactly shocked by the result that Brisbane won, because Brisbane are a decent team. I don't have them as a team that would be up there this year, but I think they're a decent team. But this shocked me, because I think this is the best I've seen Brisbane play in a while, to be honest. Even late last year when they were starting to grind through games and stuff, they never really had a standout game where they were completely dominant against a pretty top team. But I think the best game I've seen them play since they beat Victory 5-0 last year. And, well, it proved, like, they were, like, I can't put my finger on Brisbane at the moment, but they played really well. And I rate Perth as a top team this year, and Perth didn't really look up for it at all. So, fair play to Brisbane. They well and truly deserve the 3 points, but like you said, I don't know how Morelli missed that goal, because he could have easily put the game away a lot earlier than what it was. So, yeah. So, no, they deserve 3 points, but I was actually pretty surprised, because I reckon Perth are class this year.
Yeah, and obviously with Perth having a very good start to the season, you might have thought like they're probably going into the game favourites. But I think I remember picking up on it in an interview with one of the Perth players after the game. I think it might have been Josh Risden, just mentioning how the long travels do affect Perth more than people might think. And Perth to Brisbane is quite a hefty travel. That's a good 5 hours or so. I'm pretty sure we're doing the calculations prior to the podcast and figured that Perth to New Zealand for the distance cup is like 8 hours or so, 8 or 9 hours. So they certainly do their fair share of travelling, Perth. And maybe this week they looked a little bit off in parts, especially the first half. I think they looked a little bit off. But they just didn't quite get it this week. Perth, probably another team that's good enough for the top six come the end of the season, and probably in your predictions pre-season that Perth would be in the top six alongside possibly Brisbane as well. So,
Well, I've got Perth as a top four team this year. I think the top three is a class above, but I do see Perth being a good team this year. They've got a class front four. Their defence is pretty well structured. I don't think their midfield is that good, but at the same time, like, there's a nice little balance between their two. They're not going to get absolutely dominated midfield, because they've got some big bodies there too. So they'll be good, and especially with their home record, they've got a reasonably good home record over the last few years as well, which will help them out a lot. And that's the thing with Perth. I think, like you said as well, and like we're talking about pre the podcast, they're a team that, like, they'll be fantastic at home. They'll beat teams consistently at home, but it's the travel that's going to ruin their chances at a real crack at a title nearly every single season, because they travel so much, and at the end of the day, it's going to catch up with them.
Yeah.
So it's difficult, because there's teams that, like, in Europe that struggle off coming off, like, European football, that travel like 4 hours or something like that, and Perth basically have to travel 4 to 5 hours minimum every single week, every single second week, unless they're travelling to Adelaide. So it's going to catch up with them, and that's going to be the thing, I think, that separates them from the top three. But I think they will be around there. And with Brisbane, at the start of the year, looking at the squads, I had Brisbane sitting around 6th, 7th or 8th, but it just depends, because a manager like John Aloisi surely had a shit time at heart, but he's obviously picked up his record at Brisbane, and I don't know, they've got a good team, and I think Jamie McLaren's still one of the best strikers in the league, but I can't really put my finger on Brisbane, because there's going to be games where they could come out and beat teams at home like 3 or 4 nil, like potentially beat teams like Perth or Western Sydney or something 3 or 4 nil at home, but then they'll travel to a place like Newcastle and lose 4 nil. So yeah, I can't put my finger on Brisbane.
Just super inconsistent this season, it looks like. And yeah, you touched on it, like, their front four is quality. I mean, Jamie McLaren is one of the better strikers in the league, and you've got Tommy Orr, Brandon Borello, Thomas Broich around him. So definitely the class, it's just going to be that consistency. And those players are still quite young. I mean, Borello and McLaren are in their early 20s, and Broich has been around the system for a while, and so is Tommy Orr. He's only, 25, 26, I think, so... Yeah. We'll see with Brisbane. They're definitely a team that could be challenging in the top six, but I guess time will tell. And if they get that consistency right, then they could definitely be a force. Moving on to the last game of the round, and it is Melbourne Victory 6, Wellington Phoenix 1. A crazy game night at Etihad Stadium. Bessart Berisha scored 2 goals early from the spot in the 20 and the 22nd minute, before Roy Krishna actually brought it back to 2-1 in the 63rd minute. But from there, it was all Victory. I think the player got sent off just before the Wellington Phoenix goal. I'm not certain. Marco Rojas scored in the 71st and the 77th minute before Berisha completed his hat-trick in the 82nd, and Mitch Austin got involved in the scoring in the 91st minute. Victory welcomed back a refreshed James Troisi, who did look to be well ahead of a lot of players on the pitch last night. But a brilliant win for Victory. I'm not going to say they've had a poor season to date, but they definitely have been pretty slow in comparison to what we've seen to Victory to do over the years. But it was good to see Victory just go out there and thump a team like Wellington, as they should be, realistically.
Well, obviously, I was really pleased with this. We've had an interesting start to the season, to say the least. Like, you go on to Brisbane, and somehow in the 96th minute, the ball's floated into the top corner from Brisbane. So we've had 3 points snatched away from us there, and then got absolutely pumped in 2 derbies in 10 days, which obviously isn't good for Victory standards, but then gone to Adelaide and snatch a late winner there. So it's been an interesting year already for us, season already for us, but... to come out and beat Wellington like this is very pleasing, because it's exactly what we needed, realistically. I have nothing against Wellington at all. I think they're a great club, and I'm glad that they're still in the A-League, especially for this fixture, because we always play them on the day before Melbourne Cup, and we always beat them in this fixture as well. So it's nice to have a guaranteed 3 points every single season. But Wellington are a good club, and I think they're going to still do all right this year. With players like Barbarouche's Krishna, Bonavasia, and Finkler running their front four. It's a pretty good front four. But it's going to be the defence that catches them out every week, obviously, as you saw yesterday with us putting 6 past them. I reckon I don't want to sit here and say we're back, but I have got us sitting on top of the table for the end of the season. It's probably a little bit biased, but I think with our front four, hopefully coming back against Sydney of Troisi, Rojas, Baista and Berisha, I think that's going to be a big improvement from the front four that we had for the start of the season. Nothing against Mitch Austin. I think he's a decent player, but I don't think he's a player that realistically should be playing 90 minutes for us every single week. And then once we put Valeri back in there too, I think we'll be looking good, but we've got to start to get a little bit of consistency, because we can't afford to beat Wellington 6-1 one week and then go lose to Sydney the next week, realistically, because then we'll just get back into that slump of horrible inconsistency that we had last year, where we'd beat a team reasonably convincingly and then we'd draw a few games and lose. That's literally a story of Victory every single season, apart from the season that we've won the titles. So... we've got to find that consistency still, but I didn't expect that last night at all. I think Wellington are pretty class, and I actually had a sneaky feeling that they'd equalise, and they nearly did. Like, it was a really good save from Thomas, because Bonavasi has always got a pretty good rocket of a shot on him, and it was going into the top corner, so it was a pretty good save from Thomas, and if they equalise there, then God knows what's going to happen, but yeah. Can't complain with a 6-1 win, obviously.
Yeah, and you touched on that front four. Marco Rojas, Berisha, Beister and Troisi. And we will get more in-depth in that shortly. I had Victory certainly as title contenders this season. And Just the squad they've got, it's just all round very, very good. Possibly the defence might lack slightly in the central defence, but in saying that, like, yeah. Barrow is a CDM, realistically. He's playing centre-back, and he's not doing a bad job. And Ansell's still young. I rate Ansell as a bit, as someone that could one day be a very, very, very good centre-back. So we'll see what happens. I hope for victory's sake that Beister comes in and is that extra attacking spark, which, I mean, they don't really need realistically after smashing 6-5 Wellington last night, but just just another attacking spark for them that could take them to the next level. And I think that potentially is the player that they definitely need. But in saying that, we move on to have a look at the table as we finish the review of week one. Sydney FC sitting very impressively at the top of the table with 4 wins from 4. It's hard to argue with their early season form. I think you mentioned they haven't even conceded a goal, so...
Yeah.
that's pretty decent. Melbourne City sitting in second with 3 wins from 4 on 9 points with a single loss. Melbourne Victory in third place on 7 points, joint with Perth Glory and Brisbane Roar, all on 7 points. Newcastle sit just inside the 6 on 5 points. Western Sydney just outside on 5 points. Before Central Coast, Adelaide and Wellington, all winless in the first 4 games of the season, make up the bottom 3. As we have a look at the top scorers in the league, Besar Berisha currently leads all comers, equal with Bruno Fornaroli and Marco Rojas, so he doesn't lead all comers. At the top of the assist table, Marco Rojas has enjoyed a very, very, very good start to the season with 3 assists. Mitch Nichols actually sits on 2, and Andrew Nabu has 2 assists as well. Ryan Kitto has 2 assists, who is a surprise player to be up there, but he has enjoyed a nice season. Bruce Kamau, after his transfer from Adelaide, has enjoyed a good season as well. So, no surprise to see the top two in the Golden Boot be Berisha and Fornaroli, and Marco Rojas was always going to be very, very good, returning to the A-League after his spells in Switzerland and Germany. But that's all for round 4. As we move on now to discuss a few topics, we've certainly thought up a few things, a few intriguing things that have been on our minds. We haven't really spoken about it. We wanted to bring it on to the first A-League podcast. And Jake, I believe you have a topic that will be keenly digested by our listeners.
Who has the better front four out of the big three this year? So we've got Sydney with Bobo, Ninkovic, Ebini and Holosko. City with Fornaroli, Brendan, Cahill and Kamau. And Victory with Berisha, Rojas, Troisi and Beister. So in your opinion, who do you think out of those three teams? Because I don't want to sound too biased, but they are the three teams that realistically will probably be sitting on top of the table at the end of the year. So who do you think has the best firepower in them? And I don't really want to weigh into this too much because it's obviously going to come back as a biased opinion. But I'd like to hear a neutral point of view, Jordan.
From me?
Yeah, realistically, like, I know that you do support Victory in a way, but you're more a neutral A-League supporter than what you are an individual club supporter.
I think, yeah, you have to look at each, you have to dissect each team. Each front four, that is, to really figure this one out, because realistically, the front four of each of these teams are easily the most, you know, impressive front four in the entire league. Sydney, you know, you've got Bobo up front, who's putting them in at the start of the season. Obviously, it didn't take long to adjust to the league, and it's good to see for Sydney, and he's definitely a massive part of their early season form. Ninkovic has always been class. He showed that last season. And alongside Holosko, have been two very good imports for Sydney over the last couple of seasons. Who was the fourth name for Sydney? Did you mention?
Ebini.
Ebini. So Ebini, he's injured at the moment, isn't he? He's just come back from injury.
Yeah, he's just come back.
So
he's not actually starting games for them just yet, I don't think. But he will be, obviously, a starter in the front four for them once he gets back to full fitness.
Very scary prospect for a lot of teams. Obviously, everyone knows Bernie Ebini from his Central Coast days, and prior to leaving, I think he was at Sydney for a season. he yeah, he definitely has the class to turn it on and score some impressive goals, and that got him a move to Belgium. So he's definitely class in that front four for Sydney. Melbourne City, Cahill, everyone knows Cahill is, you know, the icon of Australian football. Fornaroli is probably the one of, if not the best player in the A-League. Kamau, young talent, definitely going to be class in a couple of seasons. Can see him breaking into the Socceroos team. And on the other side, Brandan has enjoyed a pretty good start to the season, played very well over in Argentina. And then you have that really good attack of Victor Choisi, the winner of the Asian Cup for Australia. He's always been good. He's got a move overseas, and he's done well overseas, probably not as well as his ability should. But it's good to see him back in the A-League for a second spell. Rojas is back, and he's playing very well already. Didn't take him any time at all to adjust back into the A-League. Berisha, probably the second best striker in the league. I don't want to say he's the best, because I did just say Fornaroli is the best player in the league, and he's a striker, but he's probably the second best striker in the league. And he scored his 50th goal, I think, for Victory last night. With a hat-trick next to his name, so it's not too bad. And Bajsta, we haven't seen anything of Bajsta, but from what I have seen of him in the highlights and just what I've heard from a few supporters from the club he was at, I think it was Mainz, or something like that, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, Hamburg or something, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely a good player, capable of something incredible. As we saw with that crazy volley outside the box in his highlights reel.
Fuck. If we could do that on Saturday against Sydney, that'd be fucking fantastic.
I think the player we're leaving out here, Mitch Austin, has been, you know, pretty decent for Victory at the start of the season. He's got an incredible amount of pace. But yeah, yeah. I wouldn't put him ahead of any of those four players. But he'd definitely be some option off the bench.
Broski out of Sydney as well. We left Broski out of Sydney, so there's probably still players there. Like, I don't know who we've left out of Sydney's attack, but there's probably a player that we've left out there, like Fitzgerald or something like that.
Yeah.
But like, there's players obviously on the fringe of that, but realistically, these front fours are probably the like starting front four to these three teams at the same time too. Austin's been okay for us, but like I said earlier, I don't think he's a player that realistically has 90 minutes in his engine. But he's a good I think he's a great player for us to be able to have off the bench for the last 20 minutes of games too, because with that pace against a few tight fullbacks could create a bit of drama. But each of those three teams can stake their own claims to have the best front four in the league. But then this comes to my next question. Are Sydney the real deal?
It's a great question.
They've played four games. They've won four games. They've scored 11 goals and conceded no goals. They've got players like Wilkinson and Zulo in their defence. And they've got that front four. Are they the real deal? Or are City and Victory and potentially Perth just starting to find their strides, and will they overrun them?
I personally think Sydney is the real deal. I can 100% see them finishing in a top two position at the end of the season. I think the start of this season they beat Newcastle on the weekend. They've had good wins against Central Coast, Western Sydney. They put four past both of those, and I can't remember who they beat in the other game. It might have been Perth, or maybe Wellington. I'm not too sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been class. Like, you can't put anything wrong against them. They've done everything that's been asked of them. They haven't beaten, like you said earlier, they haven't beaten any of the top sides in the league. So I guess until they do, it's always going to bode the question of if they're good enough. And they get an opportunity this week against Victory to make a statement as such in that regards. But I can definitely see them being a top, you know, top two side and possibly winning the league if they just continue to do what they're doing, treat the bigger sides in the league as they have been treating them, the lesser sides in the league, and putting them away. They've got the players. We mentioned just then that their front four, you know, Beanie when he's in full flight, Holosko, Ninkovic and Bobo are just, you know, that's class. It's a shame there's no Australians in that, apart from a beanie. It's a shame we can't have a player of, you know, Ninkovic, Holosko or Bobo's ability as an Australian. But, you know, I think Sydney's definitely the real deal this season, Jake.
See, I'm taught, like I said earlier, they haven't really beaten anyone that's, like, class, realistically. But, like I also said, you've got to beat the teams that are put in front of you, and that's exactly what we're doing. But they do get the real test for them, and realistically for Victory too. Both have fantastic tests this weekend coming up for them, with Victory versus Sydney in Sydney. They're a top two to three team, definitely. But I don't know if they are the real deal right now. Like, everyone's saying they're guaranteed top two, which realistically they're probably guaranteed top three, top four, but they've still got to beat the teams that are put in front of them. They're doing that, but will they still be able to handle it when they come up against teams like City, Victory, Perth? I'm not too sure just yet. They've definitely got a good team and a good squad, but one thing, the Sydney teams over the last few years, apart from the year where they played in the grand final, one thing they do have is a lot of talent on paper, but don't really put that talent on paper into actions. So be interested to see if they do for the rest of the season. But yeah, they're definitely up there. But like I said a few times, it's going to be their real test this week against Victory.
And I rate that. I rate that opinion, Jake. I will. I will discuss a topic that has always been an iffy one with a lot of A-League fans, and that's the young talent just going abroad, you know, too early in their careers. You've seen the likes of Pasquale just been announced that he's going to Ajax, and he's only, 16, 17 years old. He's played two games of A-League, and he's already heading abroad. I think Ajax, in that respect, is a different proposition just because it's Ajax. It's well known to be one of the best, you know, breeding grounds for young players. They learn as much as they can about football there. Like, that's easily one of the best academies in the world. So in that respect, I know a lot of Victory supporters, including yourself, isn't disappointed because of it, because everyone knows how good Ajax are at developing talent. But then you look at the likes of, you know, Kwame Yeboah. He scored two goals in the A-League, and then he was off. He was off to Mönchengladbach, where, albeit recently, he's certainly doing a lot better than he has been in the past. I think he's scored four or five goals a season in their second team. But putting that ahead of playing every week in the A-League, possibly getting to the national team and then finding a way up into a higher league where he plays consistently. Because at the moment, he is playing for Mönchengladbach's second team, but they're playing in the fourth division of Germany. So it's like, it would be more beneficial for him, in my opinion, to be playing against better opposition than to be training with better players, if you know what I mean. Yeah. You got, you know, Aoma Bills over in Norway not doing too badly. Tom Rogic is probably the one that everyone looks at and sees as the success story of leaving young. You know, he's obviously doing very, very well in Celtic. He's improved astronomically since he's left Central Coast.
That's a good word. That's a really good word. I like that.
I've always tried and put that word in different places.
Very diplomatic word.
Very diplomatic. And then you got Thomas Deng over at PSV this season. Played just once for the second team when he had huge raps and probably would be playing every week for the Victory at the moment. So it's certainly a topic that tears a lot of people. Everyone loves to see talent go overseas, but it's so hard from the A-League to get a gig overseas and playing in their first team. It's a big ask, but I'd just like to hear your opinion, Jake.
Well, I think the perfect example for it all, for like of what players should be looking to do, is exactly what Aaron Moy's done. He played a few years in the A-League. He went from Western Sydney, where he wasn't fantastic, but he was starting to stamp a claim to be up there in the top 10 or so centre mids in the league. He moved to City, where he was given a much more, I don't know what to say here, much more dominant role, where he was really needed to step up. And if he wasn't stepping up, then City wouldn't win, realistically.
He had a lot more responsibility.
It was a key player for City, where at Western Sydney, when he was at Western Sydney, he wasn't exactly a key player because he was around players like Shinji Ono. But at City, he was the key player. He was the go-to player in their midfield. And that's where he stood out. He had, he had two or three seasons at City. Or at Hart and then City or something. But like last year, for example, he could have easily just gone and said, I'm too good for this league, I'm going to leave. And realistically, when you put it into perspective, he was too good for the league. If you look at his stats from last season, he was the standout player last year, in my eyes, from anyone else. When he was on the ball, everyone was watching.
Yeah.
And now he's got his reward. He got picked up by Manchester City and he's loaned out to Huddersfield in the Championship. And from what I'm looking at from people on Twitter and all that, he's still standing out in the Championship. He's one of the better centre mids in the Championship as well. That is the prime example of what players should be looking to do. I have nothing against Pasquale going to Ajax because he's at a young age where he can go to Ajax and develop. But then when you've got players like Yeboah, who scores two goals for Brisbane and then fucks off, and now he's done, apart from the start of this year, he's done nothing for like three to four seasons. And we've seen too much of that. You've got players like Danny Da Silva, who sets the world on fire for Perth, and he's playing every second week, in fairness, for Rota, but still, why not stay in Australia for an extra year or so, stand out even more, then get picked up by a team like what Tommy Rogic did. And now Tommy Rogic is starting every single week for Celtic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a weird topic. Like, it's a very weird topic because obviously you can't put yourself in their shoes because there's a lot of players, realistically, that will be looking towards their long-term future as well. But like I said, the prime example of what I think players should be doing is what Aaron Mooy has done. Because Aaron Mooy could have, and realistically, Aaron Mooy was ready for the Championship at the start of last year. But yeah, he stayed one more year and he stamped his claim as the best central midfielder in Australia. And now he's a regular Socceroo and he's a regular starter at a team that's in the top four of the Championship. So that's my opinion on it.
And you could almost say the same thing about Mooy in a similar way to Tommy Juric is now just in. He didn't go too young. He stuck around for a bit. He could have gone 4 years ago. He could have gone overseas and tried, you know, busting a move out there. But he came back to the A-League and he performed. I wouldn't say he set the world on fire in the A-League, but he performed well. And now he's overseas and he's playing every week and he could be the answer to Australia's striker problems after Tim Cahill.
I know he's not Australian, but you could even use Roy Haas as an example. Roy Haas, I think, should have definitely stayed another year in Australia because he had a standout year and then left. And I know that injuries did sort of ruin his time away, but he wasted nearly 3 to 4 years of his career, 3 years of his career. Realistically, yeah, he didn't do much in Europe. He only started 15 games in his time in Europe. And all those games that he did start were in like the fourth division or the third division of whatever country he was in. He was playing for Stuttgart's second team or third team or something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, Roy Haas is another example of that. I know it doesn't really affect Australians all that much because he's a Kiwi, but he's still obviously the standout class player he is. But he's come back to Australia and he's played three games in the A-League and he's got 4 goals and 3 assists.
Yeah.
But it's like I said before, you can't really put yourself in their shoes, but you've got to think, I honestly, if Roy Haas stayed out one more year, dominated one more year, he would have got picked up by a team in the Championship or something like that, and that would have been perfect for him.
Yeah, or even he could have gone to Stuttgart again, but this time with another year under his belt, might have actually played exactly for Stuttgart.
Well, even Rogic. Like, Rogic did it perfectly, realistically. I think he did leave to Celtic a little bit too early. So then he came back to Victory. So he didn't play too many games for Victory, but he came back to Victory, got a bit of first-team football into him, then got injured, missed out on the World Cup, which obviously fired him up even more to perform, and now he's literally a regular starter in the number 10 role for Celtic, which is a pretty big club. They dominate the Scottish Championship every single week, and they're playing Champions League football.
It's what young A-League players should be looking to do, getting to a team like Celtic where they can play every week in the Champions League. You know, it's like, that's what most young players want to do. They want to progress to play Champions League. They want to play, you know, La Liga, Premier League, anything. But even if you get into the Scottish Premiership and then you still play Champions League football, like, that's not a bad thing at all.
If you're a young Australian player, you're looking, obviously there's probably fucking none of them listening to this podcast, but if you're a young Australian player and you're looking for something to model yourself off of what you should try to do with your career, you should be looking at careers like Rogic and Moy.
100%.
And I know it's a bit different for players like Jedinak and Cahill. Like, Jedinak's a good example because Jedinak started in the LA2 and then he ended up being a captain of a Premier League team. But, like, obviously it's a bit different for players like Harry Kewell and Tim Cahill and stuff because they didn't have the A-League when they first started. They made their own personal choice to go trial at clubs over in England and then get picked up themselves. But, like, one player that I've just noticed that we did miss out on is Jedinak, because Jedinak started in the A-League 2 at Central Coast. And now he's gone and captained a team for a few seasons in the Premier League. And no, like, now he's in the Championship, yeah, but realistically, it's not a bad thing. Like, Championship's not a fucking horrible league. So, Jedinak's also another prime example that if you stick out a few seasons in the A-League, and I know it's not the class league that everyone realistically wants it to be, and everyone wants to have their players to stay in the league, but it's not going to happen. As much as I'd love players to stay in the league, it's not going to happen. If the way you want to progress your career is you want to go to Europe.
Yeah.
That's obvious. And players like Jedinak, Rogic and Moy have done it perfectly. They weren't up themselves with it all. They knew they would have known that they were probably a little bit of a class above majority of the players in the league, but they weren't arrogant with it. They weren't like, fuck this, I'm going to fuck off to Europe. They stayed it out and I don't know, but I have no doubt there were obviously teams in Europe watching them play and watching them stand out. And now they've got their rewards. And with players like Yeboah, he was obviously class when he was playing for Brisbane, but what if he played a few more seasons at Brisbane?
Well, that was the thing. The problem with Yeboah, I think, was he left in January. So he only really started playing, you know, late November, start of December. So he realistically played 1 month of A-League football where he played well.
Exactly.
The thing with that was he was considered an outsider for the World Cup squad in 2014. If he had stayed at Brisbane for the rest of the season, he might have scored, you know, another, you know, 5, 6, 7 more goals, put in a few assists, and just played class every week, might have been in that World Cup squad and earned himself a move where he could be playing first team football every week. Even if he only stayed for half a season extra, it's like it all adds up in the end of the day. Just staying that little bit extra might help propel your career, you know, to 2-3 times as good as it would be.
Yeah, and even another example could be Jamie McLaren. I think Jamie McLaren's a player that in a few seasons I could definitely see playing up front, maybe not consistently starting, but could be playing up front for a Championship team. But he's come out last year and he scored, what, like 20 goals?
Yep.
This year, what if he comes out and scores another 20 or so goals again? I don't want him to straight away leave. I think he should stay another year, stamp his claim more, score another 20 goals. Just say he's scoring another 20 goals. That's roughly 60 goals in 3 seasons of football. Any Championship team or League One team or Championship or Scottish team or anyone in Europe, realistically, that's not like top club, would be looking at that. Because A-League's not a shit league. It's not horrible. If you're scoring 60 goals in 3 seasons in the A-League, you're a fucking good player. Realistically, if you're scoring 60 goals in 3 seasons in any league, really, you're a fucking good player. But in the A-League, it's not great, obviously, but it's a tough league. So, like, we've had players come here and fail. We've had Del Piero come here, and sure, Del Piero was all right, but he didn't come here and absolutely dominate the league. No. We had Harry Kewell come here, and Harry Kewell was, I know he came here at the end of his career, really. We've had Harry Kewell come here, and he did the furthest thing from dominating the league. And he was a class player as well. And we've got Tim Cahill here, and sure, he scored a fucking 40-yard worldie on his debut. But I think Cahill's struggling to adapt to the A-League. And that proves with the fact that he's only playing 60 minutes a game.
Yep.
So I think Jamie McLaren should also have a good hard look at what Moy and Rogic and stuff are doing too, because I don't think that, because he could be the future of Australian football playing up front. If I rate Jamie McLaren, I think he could be a player that could be playing up front for the Socceroos easily, come alongside Tommy Urich or something like that, again, coming up to even the Confederations Cup this year and the World Cup in 2018.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot to think, and I care about the Socceroos. Obviously, I'm one of those fucking people that some people don't like, that I care more about club football than what I do for my national team. But at the same time, I still care about my national team, and I want players, as much as I hate them scoring, banging in goals consistently against Victory, I want the players to develop the right way so then they can give the best possible for the Socceroos as well. Because I love keeping track of players that are playing overseas that are from Australia that have come through the A-League. But then it fucking pisses me off when there's players like Yeboah who scores two fucking worldies and fucks off and does nothing for 3 years.
Yeah. I don't want to... Like, keep on. Hey, keep going.
The Pasquale situation is completely different, though, like we've said, because he's 16 years old. It's not like he's... Like, I know that he has come in and somewhat set the league on fire because he's the young talent everyone's having a look at right now, because he played fantastic against Juventus and then he came on against City when we were 4-1 down and played well. Like, he was the only source of happiness out of that derby. And then he came on against Adelaide, where we haven't won there in 7 years, and he produces the assist to score the winning goal. And now he's getting his reward. And I don't have a problem with that. I know he's only played 3 to 4 games for us, but I don't have a problem with that because he's 16 years old and it's not like he's going to Ajax to get first-team football. He's going to Ajax to probably play with their youth team, and he's 16 years old, turning 17 soon, and he's going to be involved with one of the best academies in world football. And that's the perfect thing for him. Even if he gets signed up by Ajax and then comes back to Victory on loan for a season.
Yep.
Where Ajax can track what he's doing and then implement that into like pre-season training and all that stuff.
Yep.
With class players. That's perfect for him. As shit as it is that we're, again, losing a talent, like I said, the A-League's not the fucking most fantastic league in the world. Everyone wants, realistically, you want to progress yourself out of the A-League. There's not one, Jamie McLaren's not sitting here thinking, I want to spend the rest of my career in the A-League. He's not, I guarantee you, he's not wanting to spend the rest of his career in the A-League. No one does. There's not one youth player in the A-League that's like, potentially, could have potential of moving to Europe, that's sitting there thinking, I want to spend the rest of my career in the A-League. Because no one does. As much as I'd love them to, no one does. Everyone wants to go to Europe.
Yeah.
But the Pasquale situation is completely different to any situation involving like Yeboah and stuff like that, because like I don't know about the Mönchengladbach youth system, but Yeboah, which I remember headlines and stuff, Yeboah was going to Germany to try and have a crack at first team football. Pasquale's not going to the Netherlands right now to have a crack at going bang straight into the Ajax first team.
Mm. Well, I don't want to expand this topic too much, and I want to hear a lot of people listening to this. I want to hear their opinion on this sort of topic, but I do want to mention one more name, arguably Australia's best player, Matt Ryan. Look what he's done. He's played, I can't remember how long he played in the A-League. It might have just been the 2 seasons.
Yeah, 2, but, I'll have a look now while you're talking about him.
But he's made his mark in the A-League. He got his opportunity as a 19-year-old, 18, 19-year-old. He's kept 11 clean sheets in his first season of professional football as a teenager. He's gone on as a 20-year-old in the next season at Central Coast Mariners and kept, 15, 16 clean sheets for the season.
Three seasons.
In a team that I'm pretty sure won the league that year. So he was a 20-year-old keeper playing in a team that won the A-League keeping 16 clean sheets. So he stuck around for a few seasons while Central Coast were quite good. Made his mark, stamped his authority on the league as one of the premier keepers of the league, and that being a 20-year-old keeper, and that's caught the attention of Club Brugge in Belgium, and then the rest is history. He's moved on to Spain. Okay, he's not playing as much now, but you can tell from what he was then to what he is now just how much he's improved. So,
exactly. Yeah, that's a fantastic example, because like he's slowly progressing his career. He's gone from 3 years in the A-League where he was quite, oh, I wouldn't say quite easily, but he was the best keeper in the league in a good Central Coast team. And then he's gone to Belgium, and he was one of the best keepers over in Belgium. I think he won the Keeper of the Season award there 2 years in a row.
Yeah, he did.
In the Belgian league.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's the Belgian league's reasonably good too. And he's gone and done that in the Belgian league. And now he's playing in the league. I'm sure he's not playing every single week, but he's still playing a fair few games in the La Liga. I wouldn't say Valencia is too good at the moment, but Valencia is a pretty well-known club. Like, if you look at, like, if you wanted to name the five biggest clubs in the league, Valencia would be in those five clubs. So, it's not a bad club to be at. Like, obviously, you'd rather him be playing more consistently, especially with the Confederations Cup coming up later at the end of this season, and then World Cup at the end of next year. But who's saying that he won't move on? Like, he could easily go right now, quite easily, get a start at any championship club. Obviously, the championship is a massive step down from the Liga, but I don't see why even a team in the EPL wouldn't pick him up. Like, if you look at the EPL right now, why wouldn't a team like Sunderland or Hull City or West Brom or someone like that pick him up? Or I wouldn't say Burnley, because Tom Heaton's probably the best keeper in the league right now. But
of that level...
Yeah, there's no reason at all why he wouldn't be starting for a team like Sunderland.
And I would love him, like, so, us being Everton supporters. I know we've mentioned him before. I would love Matt Ryan to be in goals for Everton.
Yeah, if Matt Ryan's signing for Everton right now, I'd have him as our number one keeper. I don't know if that says anything about Stekelenburg and Joel, but at the same time, he's a class keeper, and it's not like he had one decent season in the A-League and he's like, okay, I'm the best keeper here, let's go. He stuck it out for three seasons. So, that's another good example, yeah.
Okay, I'm the best keeper here, let's go.
That's basically what some players do. There's so much arrogance in some young players that come through the system in Australia, and they think they're too fucking good for it, and then they fuck off and do nothing.
Yeah. Well...
Yeboah's the main example. I fucking hate Yeboah. He's a fucking dumb cunt.
Certainly a good conversation topic for those... listening, if you want to get involved, we've got our Facebook page up and about, JJ's Football Fix on Facebook, and you can leave a comment on SoundCloud or whatever you like. Before we even progress any further, Jake, I kind of wanted to introduce a segment. We haven't spoken about it.
Oh, here we go.
I want to do a JJ's Football Fix Player of the Year award for the A-League.
Player of the Year.
So we both get to vote each week. We pick our 3-2-1, three being the best player of the week, every single game included, and we just pick out three players who we think shown during that week of A-League fixtures. I haven't given you any time to prepare.
Shit. This. Yep.
So I'm not sure if you want to go ahead with it this week or if you want to start it off next week.
No, I couldn't have a crack at it this week. It'd probably be a bit biased considering I've just come with a 6-1 win last night, but...
So I was literally going to say three Melbourne Victory players.
No, I wouldn't do that, though.
But I have got two Victory players in my top three.
I do too, yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
We've probably got the exact same top three, I guarantee you.
We'll go with you first, Jake.
Number one will be Berisha, just because he scored a hat-trick. I don't think, obviously, it was easy to score a hat-trick for him, realistically, having two penalties and a tap-in, but... He was still pretty good yesterday, in fairness to him. So you can't really look past a hat-trick. So he's definitely my number one. Who's your number one?
Is this number one as a one vote or number one player?
Number one is in on one vote. Like, one vote? So, like, you know, like you like Brownlow votes, yeah, it goes like 3-2-1. Yeah, so, like, this is, like, the number one. Like, this is, he gets one vote.
My number one. I was actually going to give my number one to Marco Rojas this week. Scored two, assisted two. Can't ask for much more from him.
Can't really, can you?
He definitely played a major role against his former team, Wellington. He's enjoying a fruitful start to the season.
Fruitful. It's the third time this podcast you've said fruitful. I will give my second vote to Bruno Fornaroli. He needed to, like, oh, I can't really say he needed to step up because I can't remember the last time he had a bad game, but he needed to have a good game, obviously, with Cahill not playing, and he did. He scored a pretty fucking good goal and scored a penalty, and his two goals got them a vital 3 points against Adelaide. So, yeah, my two votes will go to Bruno Fornaroli.
I'm going to give my two votes to Berisha. Yep. For obviously getting the hat trick, a bit two from the spot. I think he was very, very impressive in last night stumping Wellington. So yeah, as you stated before, you pretty much had a rundown of Berisha. He gets my two votes.
Yeah, my three votes from my house. I think he was clash yesterday. Two goals, two assists. And it's not just this week; like, it's difficult for him because he came to Australia a bit late in the preseason, and then he's gone over to America during round one, and he's come back from America, he's played three games, he's got four goals and three assists, it's pretty fucking good. So yeah, my three votes go to Rojas just because he was fucking class yesterday.
I'm actually going to go left field here with my three votes. I'm actually going to give my three votes to Storm Roux of Central Coast Mariners. He,
oh, yeah, fair enough.
He was very,
not
very...
Not expect that indie slightest. No. Like, but... We're a foreign roller just to be a twat.
But he was very impressive in the defence for Central Coast. And it was actually his first game back. Or it might have been his first... I'm not sure if his first game or his first start since... his injury, obviously, he did his ACL and broke his leg and all these other horrible injuries in that match last season, I think, against Melbourne City. Storm Roux does get my three votes for his performance against the Western Sydney Wanderers. So, I mean...
Are we going to actually keep track of this?
We'll keep track of it. So, the winning player so far, Marco Rojas, has four votes. Berisha has...
Three.
I gave him two. You gave him two. One. So he has three.
Storm Roux
has
three. This
has been fantastic. Fornaroli has two, and that's it.
Yeah.
So Marco Rojas is the current JJ's Football Fix Player of the Year so far.
And whoever wins that earns a dinner at the buffet with Jordan and I.
The Point Cook Buffet. Everyone get around it. For those out in Point Cook, you have a...
Plug.
plug. sponsor money. Bet365. Sponsor. Plug. Before we go into anything Bet365, though, we have our preview for this week, Jake. Brisbane Roar versus Melbourne City. We're actually well over an hour into the podcast here, so it is the A-League hour is certainly an hour and a bit. Brisbane versus Melbourne City at Suncorp Stadium this Friday night. The Roar, fresh off a 2-1 win against Perth. Melbourne City, fresh off a 2-1 win against Adelaide. I think it was Adelaide. Pretty sure it was Adelaide, wasn't it?
Yeah.
history.
It's been a long hour.
The last time these two teams played was in March of this year, last season that was, where Melbourne City got the 3-1 win against Brisbane. Prior to that, Brisbane did beat Melbourne City 3-1 at Suncorp Stadium. So, could be goals in this fixture. Prior to that, though, there were just single goals for either team in the previous three games. So, maybe not goals that we initially thought. I can see goals in this one, obviously, with Melbourne City being a very high-scoring team. Brisbane scoring two the other day. Doesn't mean anything, but Brisbane in fifth position, Melbourne City in second. Be a good game, Jake.
Yeah, I can't really split this game, to be honest. City are the better team this year, obviously, but I don't know. Brisbane are usually a reasonably good team at home, and I don't know if Cahill is going to be a part of the squad or not. I think if Cahill is a part of it, then City will sneak over the line. But if Cahill's not, I can see a 1-1 draw. I'm not saying Cahill will be different, but technically I am. So I don't know why I said I'm not saying Cahill's going to be different, because I've literally just given you a difference of if Cahill would be playing or not. But Cahill does obviously add a fair amount of firepower to City's front four. I'm just going to stick on a 1-1 draw for now, but I think City are the better team in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to lean in towards a draw at the moment. Caught him leaning.
you Chris, and Chris Smooth, baby.
Chris Smooth, plug.
Sponsor is Chris Smooth.
Yeah, I'm going for a draw. The 7:50 kickoff on Friday night. Hopefully a very good game. On to Saturday, we have Wellington Phoenix against Newcastle Jets. Over in New Zealand, Newcastle have a bit of a travel ahead of them. But this one, despite me saying Newcastle have a travel ahead of them, is my Bet365 Bet of the Week match involving Newcastle Jets. They've had a very good start to the season, for their standards anyway. Sitting in sixth position, Wellington Phoenix have scored just the one goal, and that was last night against Melbourne Victory, and they still cop six. So they haven't won a game, they haven't drawn a game, they've lost all four of their games so far, Wellington. And I can see Newcastle heading over to New Zealand and getting the Chockies. They're paying $3.30 to get the win, and I think that's very good odds for a team like Newcastle against Wellington.
Well, I think this has been the first time this has happened, but I disagree with that Bet 365 Bet of the Week, Jordan, because I think Wellington will get the Chockies in this one. I do rate Newcastle this year. They're a lot better this year than what they have been previous years. But I feel like at home, I think Barbarousis, Krishna, Bonavasia, Finkler will start to hit their straps, and I think they will get a 2-1 or 1-0 win over Newcastle.
Well, you're allowed to disagree. It's fine. I mean,
it's nice to disagree. It's healthy in a relationship.
Just a bit of history on this game. The last time these two teams played was a 3-2 win for Newcastle back at Hunter Stadium in February of this year. The last time at this stadium was Wellington 1, Newcastle 2 back in October of 2015. So the history does look like Newcastle had a little bit better in regards to every single fixture play between the two sides. As I said, Wellington are unwinless, in 10th position, Newcastle in 6th position with a win from 4, but 2 draws, so not too bad. And I think Newcastle will win, because I said that's my Bet365 Bet of the Week fixture, so yeah, I'm not going back on that. Moving on to the Big Blue, Sydney versus Melbourne Victory.
Don't call it the Big Blue. Oh, shit.
I don't know, I just... first thing that came to my mind. these two teams are enjoying very healthy and fruitful starts to the season. Sydney, top of the table, 4 wins from 4, 11 goals scored, none conceded. Your Melbourne Victory, third, 2 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss, 10 goals scored, 7 conceded. Both looking to get another win to go further up the table, even though Sydney can't. history does say that this is often a high-scoring affair, albeit the last time these two teams played was a 1-1 draw back in February. The last time at this stadium was a 4-2 victory for Melbourne Victory back in November of 2015. On that day, Berisha scored twice, whereas Barbarousis and Finkler both scored for Victory as well, both now playing for the Knicks. Sydney.
The Knicks.
Holosko and Brosk both scored for Sydney. Jake, what are your thoughts?
I really don't know on this game, because like I said earlier about when we were talking about Sydney, that they haven't really beaten anyone to really boast about this year, other than obviously like anyone would take a 4-0 derby win. But I don't really rate Western Sydney this year anyway. But this is a huge test for both teams, really. Sydney need to prove themselves that they can take it up against the best in the comp just yet, but a team that would be considered as one of the better teams in the competition. And Victory need to try and get a little bit more consistency to their game as well. So, but I can't really split the two teams right now. honestly depends on who plays for Victory. If Bystart and Valeri and Troisi all start, then I think we will win. But
I believe that we will win.
But I'm just going to stick, like a few years ago when both teams played each other in the grand final, that season there was 2-3-3 draws that year. So I'm just going to stick to a 3-3 draw for this game.
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be a Sydney win. I don't know why. I just think it will be.
Don't blame you at all. I'm not going to rip your head off on
at all to go with that one.
probably just a home ground advantage, to be honest.
Yeah, but
we'll just use that as the example.
We'll go with that one. It'll be the last time these two teams played there. Victory won. So, anyway, moving along to Sunday's fixtures, Adelaide United at home to Central Coast Mariners. I believe this is probably the only game of the round that I can definitely see a result going one way. Albeit, Jake, you did bring up pre-podcast that you can't see it being as straightforward, but the history does show that Adelaide have won the previous four meetings between these two sides, including a 4-2 win back in March of this year. It's probably not hard to have previous history against Central Coast being good, seeing as though Central Coast have been pretty poor. But Central Coast haven't beaten Adelaide since February of 2015, and that was at Blue Tongue Stadium. But Central Coast have not beaten Adelaide at Hindmarsh. Are they playing at Hindmarsh now? That's what it's called.
It's the same stadium, Cooper Stadium, called or some shit now.
They haven't beaten them there since March of 2013, so that was 8 or 9 meetings ago. So we'll see what happens here. I currently see an Adelaide victory, to be honest. Adelaide, albeit haven't been great at the start of the season. They haven't been bad either. They've just been unlucky in certain games. They do sit 9th, whereas Central Coast sit 8th.
I agree with you in a sense that Adelaide realistically should be winning this. But like I did say pre-podcast, I don't think it will be as straightforward as people do think. I think Central Coast will slowly gaining more confidence as each game goes by. And I feel like as much as Wanderers aren't exactly a class team this year, they will take a lot of confidence from earning a 1-1 away draw against Western Sydney. But I think Adelaide are the better team in this game. But at the same time, it's difficult for Adelaide right now to really click with certain players out, like Kuruska and Sirio and Enrique. It's difficult for them to really find their own sort of firepower to smack in 2-3-4-5 goals game. But I do think Adelaide will win 2-1.
Yeah, I think Adelaide's going to win, like I said. I can't see any other result.
Just one more money, Jordan.
good race, that one. Moving on to the last game of the round. Perth Glory at home to Western Sydney Wanderers. I could have put this one in my Bet365 Bet of the Week, being Perth Glory at home to beat Western Sydney, who are somewhat out of sorts. $2. So, decent money there.
Jeez, fucking hell.
Yeah, not bad. The last time these two teams played at this stadium was a 2-2 draw back in December of last year. Castro and Oxborough, I don't know how to pronounce that, scored for Perth, whereas Santalab and Mitch Nichols scored for Western Sydney. I do actually think that was the game Mitch Nichols scored that worldie, but he has scored a few worldies back in his day. Perth sitting in 4th, Western Sydney sitting in 7th. Both average defensively, Perth conceding 8, Western Sydney conceding Perth conceding 7, Western Sydney conceding 8. But I think Perth is going to win this game, Jake.
Yeah, 100%. I think Perth will win this game with their firepower as well. I'm not sure what the go is with Taggart. I don't know if Taggart gets back or if he's still injured or whatever. Probably should be trying to keep tabs on that because Taggart's a pretty important player for Perth. I can't see anything other than Perth win in this game. I think Western Sydney don't exactly have the firepower that they need to really test too many teams, especially like a team when it comes to Perth who've got a pretty solid team all over, albeit I don't really rate Liam Reddy as a goalkeeper. At the same time, Perth do have a reasonably solid defence with Mark Warren leading the lines at left back. but I can't see anything other than a Perth win here, to be honest. I think probably 2 or 3 nil win for Perth.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think Perth's going to win, and they should do it, in my opinion, convincingly, depending if Redmayne is still in goal for Western Sydney or not. guess we'll see.
Well, the thing is with that, it's not exactly like Western Sydney have a fantastic backup keeper.
No.
Tyson's not exactly a keeper that I'd be too content with looking. I'd rather Lucas Spinella in goals, you know.
Oh, Lucas Spinella at up and comer.
but yeah, that's something that Western Sydney should probably look at addressing too. I don't know why they got rid of Ante Kovic a few years ago, because he could still, I'd still have, even though he's obviously old, I'd still have Ante Kovic as my number one keeper over Redmayne or Tyson.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's a situation that I think Popovic may need to sort out, because if he doesn't, then they could be leaking goals for days consistently.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So yeah, I mean, that brings us to the end to our first ever A-League Hour.
Hour and a half.
We should, call it the A-League Hour and a Half. It's actually an hour and a quarter, Jake.
Well, I'm not the one that records it, so... Actually, yes, I am. I am the one that records this one. That's not... I think I said that.
I don't get it.
You don't?
Yeah. Okay. So, that was all we have time for today. Went over time. But I hope you guys enjoyed our first ever A-League Hour. JDubs Football Fix bringing you a new podcast for those listening, because we thought one was not enough. So, it should be coming out every Tuesday for those that want to keep tabs on what's going on. Obviously, you can follow us on SoundCloud to get those. And on Facebook, our Facebook page is now been set up. Under JJ's Football Fix, with an apostrophe between the JJ and the S, and not spelt JJ, J-A-Y.
Led.
If you want to get involved in that, you can check notifications on that. If you want to stay involved with all discussions and anything to do with JJ's Football Fix, that will all be going on the Facebook page. We're going to try to get Bet365 to sponsor us, because we literally mention them every single episode. And then we'll get Chris Move to sponsor us as well. Jake, you have a good time?
I've had a fantastic time. Thanks, Sean. Yeah. I think I've called you Boa a cunt a few too many times this podcast. But it's well deserved.
Well deserved. I think this podcast especially just brings another dimension to it, to JJ's Football Fix. Obviously, we have a lot to cover in the EPL podcasts, and we have, JJ's football jokes. We've got the Fantasy Scout Report in the EPL
Fantasy
one.
Fantasy Scout Report.
but this one with the less teams, a little bit less to cover, we can actually, talk about a lot of things to do with, the A-League and the Socceroos when it's relevant and stuff like that. So I think it's a nice little mix up between the two podcasts, and if you're an avid listener of either, which you're probably not, but if you do in the future become an avid listener of either, we hope you can get involved in some discussion and leave us some questions and stuff like that. We will definitely answer them when we get one.
We'll probably answer it a few times.
Yeah, we'll probably keep referring back to it and be like, oh, this person actually asked us this question about 5 times in a podcast.
Ask us one question, please.
Someone, anyone listening this late into the podcast, just ask us one. Even ask us what we had for breakfast. We don't even care.
Breakfast.
All right, that's all we got time for. Enjoy your day. We'll see you on Friday.
I'm on top of the world, eh? I'm on top of the world, eh? I'm on top of the world, eh? Waiting on this for a while now.